Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I think that listening to a happiness podcast is basically reading a self-help book. But if you delve into the world of self-help, we want to feel that we're getting cream of the crop.
Yeah, we don't want something that, for example, Jerry Halliwell would listen to.
Yeah, exactly. Don't give me some fucking populist bullshit. Give me like, this is for the smarty pants ones. So this woman who hosts this podcast, which is called The Happiness Lab, she's like a Yale professor. So I'm like, maybe she'll be good enough for me because she's a Yale professor. And I scan through and I'm looking for a topic. But then I saw the word. I saw that word that makes me go, fucking, this is bullshit. You know what it is?
Go on.
Introvert. If I ever hear an introvert talking about introversion, I'm done talking about violence. I think I'm actually starting to come across like a violent person. So I'll more gently say I hope that they die. And I'm not actively thinking that you deserve death. I'm just thinking that whatever next pandemic comes, instead of getting the asthmatics and the oldies, please go for fucking self-described introverts. This is my request from God, who I don't believe in, even though I'm trying to use these podcasts to become more spiritual. But if you're up there, buddy, can the next pando come for the self-described introverts? Because these fuckers are so fucking thrilled with themselves. I cannot. They're always like, you know, an interesting thing about me is you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it actually about me, but I'm actually like an introvert. Like, actually, I find other people like really tiring. They're always fucking thrilled with themselves. Yeah, I've realized that actually I fill myself up by like being in my own company. Fuck off. They love themselves.
But you yourself are an introvert. People might not believe this.
But this is the thing. You love talking about my introversion. You think that my introversion makes me a more interesting person. You're like, you guys, wait, listen, my wife is really interesting. She's got like a huge personality. She's very loud. She's unbelievably outgoing. She's actually a stand-up comedian. I know. She's a hero. She's so brave. Isn't it wild? Like, my wife is just a stand-up. It's no big deal how cool she is because she is also introverted. It's like you're a fucking wife guy. And it's also very annoying. Like, shut up about me. Don't say nice shit about your wife. Take an example from me and be fucking mean about me in public.
Other people thought it was a nice groom's speech. Eh. Let's talk about our guest.
Our guest this week is our actual real life friend, Catherine Jaques. We had an emergency situation earlier this summer and we said, can you just talk to us tomorrow? And she was like, yes, of course. We knew at that time that her show, Buccaneers, would be coming out. And we said, will you return to us in a proper and real capacity when Buccaneers is actually out? She's been very busy because when they were promoting the show, the actor strike was still ongoing. She as a showrunner, executive producer, and writer had to like go on that circuit. So she was very busy. But again, she's not allowed to tell us no because we have an actual friendship, which I will willingly exploit. So our guest this week is our real life friend, the showrunner and the executive producer of the new Apple hit, Buccaneers. It's only Catherine Jaques.
Quick watch.
You messaged me. I think there's something good. Boat story on iPlayer. I went, great. I was happy for the direction. I go onto iPlayer. I see the visual come up. And I think to myself, motherfucker, this fucking piece of shit. This can be some British fucking bullshit. The visual of it, as it came up on iPlayer, looked like the thing that I struggle with.
Which is?
It looks rainy. Sometimes it can be rain. Sometimes it can be a depressing kitchen. And I could see it has Daisy Haggard, who I really like, but I don't know. So I just went, oh, God. So I sat down in a sulk. That was my mood. Press play. Within 5 minutes, I was like, this is the greatest thing that has ever happened to me.
That good?
That good. And it had to catch me because I was in a sulk. So here's the idea. Plot-wise, it's very, very intricate. So it's difficult to describe, but basically it's starring Daisy Haggard and Patterson Joseph.
Johnson from Peep Show.
Of course. And it's doing this thing, you know, these things come into fashion. It's doing this thing again where there's a mix of drama and comedy. They come upon a shipwrecked boat that has a lot of cocaine on it. And the drama and the comedy ensues.
So if it's a boat, are we in one of those British seaside towns that you love so much?
Disgusting. It's such a disgusting town. But British people are so fucking defensive about this shit.
We know it about Blackpool.
Actually, for all of my goings on, I would love to see Blackpool.
I'll take you there.
Great.
You can go see the lights.
I mean, I'd rather you took me to the south of France, but do what you gotta do. But there's a boat. This isn't a spoiler, but very early on in the show, you see this boat. It is on rocky water.
Rocky water?
Rocky water. I just don't feel safe on a boat ever. I am afraid of literally dying on a ship.
Going to a watery grave.
A watery grave.
Davy Jones locker.
Exactly that. I like sailboats. If I can ever see a sailboat, I like that very much. How Monet painted the sailboats.
I like seeing a sailboat, but I don't like involving myself with ropes.
Oh, I would never go on a sailboat because they would 100% there's going to be a moment where they're like, hey, the part of the fun is I'll be like, not for me. I don't want to participate. I won't even lay out. You know what? No, it's not for me at all.
You're not going to lay on deck?
No, because I don't like direct sunlight and I don't look good in floppy hats.
Because it's going to get blown off. It's
just like anxiety and rope work that I'm not interested in. There's going to be someone there who like wants to teach you how to tie a knot. I have had a couple of occasions, this might surprise you, where people have tried to teach me knots. It's like people trying to teach you how to play like pool or snooker or whatever you call it, snooker. And it's like, I don't want to learn. I don't care. I don't care how you do your fucking knot.
You really don't like to learn a new thing,
I
do you?
I don't like to learn new shit. I can enjoy reading. I can enjoy talking. I like television. And I do like exercising sometimes.
You've got your four things.
Those are my things. No new things. Stick with what you know. Don't expand your horizons.
So given your dislike of the high seas and the British coast, what is it about this show, Boat Story, that you like so much?
Daisy Haggard is becoming...
Oh, she's fantastic.
I think she's the next Olivia Colman. I think she's like going to move from this thing and then be like, no, no, people, watch what I can fucking do. And it's like the pace of it feels good. The storyline feels fascinating. The supporting cast feels good instead of annoying. They also... So I'm 99% sure that it's brothers who've made this. When are sisters going to start making shit? When are sisters going to start doing it for themselves? Brothers are always doing shit.
Mm.
And so there's like some English brothers and they're making this. But I am feeling joy in my body and gratitude to, I think they're the Williams brothers. Thanks, boys.
Now, on last week's episode, Greg Davis recommended a Danish film called Riders of Justice. So we had a sofa date night and watched it.
Mm-hmm.
What's it about? We initially meet a guy. He's an extremely nerdy, statistical, computer, algorithm-y genius who is underappreciated at his job at the local authority. We also meet a family, the mother and the daughter at home in Copenhagen. The dad, played by Mads Mikkelsen, is away serving in the military. I can't remember where, but I'm guessing it's Afghanistan.
Okay.
It tends to be.
Sure.
The inciting incident is we then see those characters, nerd, mum, daughter, on a subway train. Nerd, being the gentleman that he is, offers his seat to the mother. She sits down. A few seconds later, there is a terrible explosion, killing several people, including her. Joe, I will always offer my seat, but inside, I always begrudge having to do it. I'm always scanning for a younger person who I think ought to be doing it. And then as I am giving my seat up to somebody else, I'm simultaneously glaring at the young person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's exactly as you should be doing it.
This explosion kills around 10 people. A nerdy statistics guy, he cannot accept that it's an accident. The police won't listen to him, so he goes about enlisting the help of the now widowed husband, played by Mads Mikkelsen. And pretty soon, we're in an unlikely alliance.
Unlikely alliance,
of a tough guy, a nerd and his very nerdy friends, versus a biker gang.
And it becomes very fun very quickly.
Where do you think biker gangs sit in the criminal hierarchy?
Oh, shit. Do they kill people?
Well, I really like a biker gang.
You do?
Because they've got a shared interest. If you think about other gangs, their shared interest is just making money. Whereas the biker gangs, they like going out for scenic rides.
Uh-huh.
Motorcycle maintenance.
Why do they all have to grow their beards so long? And what are they doing?
Well, this is interesting, isn't it? Because they do have this shared love of motorcycles. Do they spend the morning doing motorbike stuff? And then after lunch, they switch to the criminal activities.
So it's 100% motorbikes plus. It's not they just like their vehicles and they go on their little rides and they like stop at diners for their meals.
I like thinking about them buying new denim jackets and then cutting off the sleeves. And sewing their little patches on.
You don't think they're going to like a Beyond Retro where they can buy this stuff like already shorn?
Maybe.
How come they don't do denim shorts? If they're going to do like cutoffs on the sleeves, why not do like a little denim short as well?
This nerdy statistics genius guy, he enlists the help of his friends. They are some of the funniest and geekiest characters I've seen on screen for such a long time. Whenever I see characters like that, I always think these are my people. Yeah. I always find it easier to relate to whatever the extreme version of nerd is than I do to say like an everyman like Martin Freeman or Jason Bateman.
Obviously, honey. Of course, like Jason Bateman and Martin Freeman are not everyman. They're like beautiful Hollywood everyman. Like,
right.
I'm not trying to be bitchy, but I'm waiting for you to deliver a surprise to me.
But you think I'm more similar to the sort of person who would be likely to have dandruff on his face at any given time.
You have dandruff.
Right. And the other thing I wanted to say, apart from you must watch this film because it's so good, is I adore Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh my God. Oh my
God. His acting is so good. I can't understand that he's the same person from one film to another.
He is so unbelievable. I don't understand how he exists. And what was the name of that other film? You know.
Druk.
Sorry, guys. It's really difficult for Jeff to remember the English word because he's like so into Scandi shit.
It was called Another Round?
Another Round, yeah. We loved Another Round.
The end of Another Round is one of the great endings of any film ever.
We felt so sad when Writers of Justice was over. We watched the end of Another Round because it is beautiful. High recommend.
Hey, we'd love to hear from you. Make my wife happy.
It makes me so happy. I go into her inbox. I would say, let me think. I bet I go in 4 times a day. And when I have nothing or spam, I feel sad. But then when it's one of you guys, I get a little rosy glow in my little rosy cheeks.
Here's something you could do for Sarah. Is there a TV show that will convert her to the joys of the British seaside town?
I think that Boat Story is that show.
But it's not going to make you want to go on holiday to that place.
Oh, never.
Also on Boat Story, what are the best TV shows set in and around the world of boating? There seems to be a real spate of them here in the 70s and 80s. There was the An Eden Line, which was drama on the high seas between, I think, Newcastle and Gothenburg on the ferry. It was an ongoing drama on the ferry between Newcastle
and really Gothenburg. Fucking British to me.
Triangle, Howard's Way, which was very glamorous.
This Mamma Mia, here we go again.
I mean, if we're going films, I mean, a great film set on a yacht that you will never watch is Triangle of Sadness.
Of course. It's like incessant vomiting is what I've been told.
It's a brilliant film, but you will never watch it. That could be a good subject, actually. What is the thing that you know is really good, but you will never watch it?
Honey, I was thinking this because, it's different from what put the poison in you. It's like the poison was somehow already in you and therefore you have never been able to watch. And everyone says Triangle of Sadness is like the greatest film of all time and I'm never going to get to see it.
It's a very good comedy. It's a very good satire, but let's not overrate
it. No, I felt so deprived.
Oh, here's something we could try. We sort of tried it before, but you know, I was saying that I really related to the very nerdy characters in Riders of Justice. Mm-hmm. Like we tried that thing, who is in your gang? Who would you be in the band with? We could even make it, which 3 TV characters are you the mean average of?
Interesting.
I mean, with you, I think you think you're the mean average of 3 30 Rock characters. Liz Lemon, Jenna Maroney, and Kathy Geis.
Yeah. I do think I have a bit of Kathy Geis within me. Kiss! Kiss!
But yeah, we tried it last time and it didn't really work. But you never know, people might be more receptive this time. Also, are there any positive representations of biker gangs in TV or maybe film? I mean, I suppose you've got those two cooks. What are they called? The Fat Hairy Bikers. Those two guys.
Yeah, I guess they seem fine.
I don't think they're in that type of a biker gang. And we'll accept any email on the subject of Mads Mikkelsen. Just leave that wide open.
Oh, anything to do with Mads. Like, come on.
Have you had a Mads Mikkelsen encounter?
Mads Mikkelsen moment. Oh, my God. You guys, a Mads Mikkelsen moment.
And as ever, what are you watching? What do you think of what we've been watching? What have we got right? What have we got wrong? What don't we even know about? The email address is...
fuckoff@firecotchandnormcore.com.
Very exciting week for you on the Patreon.
Oh, yeah, the Patreon this week. What happened on our Patreon this week was so insane. I'm not going to talk numbers because it's too personal, but here's what happened. So last week, as you know, we got our Taskmasters, Alex Horn and Greg Davies. I don't know if you've heard, but people go fucking crazy for this show. Holy shit, the fans on this show are... very devoted, and stand-ups talk about the Taskmaster effect. Like, you go on Taskmaster and your tour changes everything. Well, I've not had that experience. But I now know what it's like when you have a Patreon. So basically, all these people joined our Patreon because they just wanted to hear. They're like, they're so obsessed with Greg Davies and Alex Horn that they were going to give us £3 a month just for 1 month. They were going to join, listen, and then cancel. What a roller coaster of emotion it has been for me. I think there was a point at which our Patreon supporters had almost doubled just because we got the Taskmasters on. It was insane.
And how is the heartbreak of those people canceling the subscriptions?
Do you know what? Because as ever with everything in life, it's all about expectation. I saw it coming. And listen, we're going to keep a few of them. I believe this. But then I got my hate tweet.
You became a figure of hate again.
I always become a figure of hate. And I don't really mind. It's because I have a strong personality. But like, so can I just tell you, like, friends of the pod, like, just gather close. Just gather on the campfire. So Jeff has interviewed Greg many, many, many times. He's always been, you have always said, he's one of your favorite people to get to talk to. And so at the most difficult times, it felt like neither Alex nor I should interrupt you and Greg. But I also don't just want to sit there mute. So, you know, at many times across the hour and 15 we spoke to them, I would try different questions that had a sense of humor.
I know that feeling of not wanting to sit there mute because I had a very bad experience of that.
When?
I would say ballpark 2007, I got a call from the Richard and Judy show.
Uh-huh.
A film was being reissued on DVD, Slade in Flame. It's the rock band Slade playing fictionalized versions of themselves. And they thought that I, as a music radio broadcaster, would be a good person to come on and talk about this. I was happy to because I love that film and I love that band. At the last minute, they also managed to book Noddy Holder, lead singer of Slade. Now, quite rightly, Rich and Judy directed the whole interview towards Noddy.
Of course.
Because you would. But I did get several messages that night from listeners who'd see me on TV saying I look like a man who'd won a competition to sit next to Noddy Holder on the television.
You poor thing. How upset did you find it versus how funny?
Oh, I just found it funny.
Right. So what happened to me was I had harsher language directed at me. So in this woman's defense, she didn't, I could tell without giving all the boring details, she didn't mean to at me into the tweet. Mm. But basically she was like, this woman is talking over him. I want to punch that bitch, me, in the face for, and this was all in caps, talking over her king. Mm. And I actually thought she there was a sense of humor to that line, her king. She wasn't
was more,
being
more or less
serious.
A sense of humor than somebody saying that they'd like to see all self-described introverts being wiped out in a pandemic.
Oh yeah, no, this is but that's why it hurt me, because there's a sense of humor to what I'm saying. I don't actually mean I think introverts should be wiped out by the next pandemic, or do I? And I felt like she doesn't really mean I'm a bitch who should get punched in the face. But that makes it worse. So it was a tough week, but worth it for that sweet coin. Even if it's just for 1 month, I will take what I can get.
So the Patreon is patreon.com / they like to watch. And coming up later, creator, showrunner, writer of the hit Apple TV Plus series Buccaneers, it's Catherine Jakeways. We watched together this week the first half of the final series of The Crown, which has just dropped on Netflix. I was trying to figure out what our relationship is with that show.
I do just like it. I was excited to watch it.
I was, but it's a funny one. I don't know why we ever pressed play on it in the first place, because I've got an aversion to period drama and I don't like things about posh people. And I'm not a hardcore Republican, but I got my issues with the royal family. I think we'd be fine without them. People would say, but what about all the money they bring in tourism? I think France seems to do fine. Paris isn't short of visitors.
I do get so fucking excited for a new season of The Crown that maybe I'm like a little more into it than I would like to be.
Yeah, we've watched all of it. And there was definitely a point where it felt like a chore.
Was there?
Yeah. I think maybe some of the 70s. I'm just trying to think about it, because I think why I watch it now is different to what I enjoyed about it in the first place.
Okay, so take us on that journey.
I think when it started out, it felt extremely high-end, and it still does as an expensive production. But you were getting social history of the country alongside this behind-closed-doors history of the Queen, who I find so interesting because she was as famous as it's possible to be, but a completely neutral character, quite a bland human being who just liked horses and duty, a sense of duty.
Big sense of duty.
And now, in the Diana era, I do feel like I'm watching a very luxurious soap opera.
I think that lady, that DeBicki woman, what's her name? Elizabeth DeBicki? She's very, 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 very good. I don't know. I'm just like, I like going inside the palace. I like thinking about how weird it must smell. I know that I would have an allergy attack in that palace. I know that you get the best of the best, like, as a servant up in there, but no.
What do you remember about the time when Diana died?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, because it was within days of when I moved to New York City. And I remember like going for a walk in the West Village. And a woman who wasn't well started running down the street and going, "Diana died!" It was so funny and weird. But I didn't feel that I was in a country that was mourning, which I know that you did. And if I'm not mistaken, you got ever so slightly carried away by the national mood.
My main memory of that time is I had to go to an STD clinic at Withington Hospital, which is the hospital where I was born in Manchester. And as I was waiting to go in, there was one of those condolence books, like a big leather-bound condolence book in the waiting room. So I signed it.
Why?
And I think I wrote something quite earnest.
That's so sweet. I truly wish a little bit more of that side of you could come back.
Not the sexually transmitted disease.
No, how did you get an STD?
I got it from myself.
Uh-huh. This is so on brand.
It was a period of my life where I had a lot of verrucas on my feet, and I was constantly picking at them, and the virus that caused the verrucas then transferred to my hands, so I had these warts on my hands, and then they made the leap from hand to penis.
So
what it looked like was there was a very small peanut inside the eye of the penis.
And that was a herpes?
No, it's a genital wart. And I don't know.
Oh, you're fucking filthy. You're fucking disgusting.
But when I think of being consumed by grief for dear dead Diana, that's the location that goes with that memory.
Anyway, people aren't loving it. I'm having a great time.
I think one of the things that people specifically aren't loving is after the death.
Spoiler alert coming. Okay, so Diana died. You know that. Spoiler alert, she was killed, but
She visits various characters as a ghost.
Yeah, that is a
But
little
she's not haunting them.
Nope.
She's not just apparating.
No, it's not an apparition.
Which I wish it was. I would find it more entertaining if she was slightly transparent.
Oh, you want
And maybe she got like the scars of her death, like a zombie.
No, here's what you want. Mm. You want, you know, there's that little spirit in Muppet Christmas Carol, the little spirit.
the ghost of Christmas Future.
Isn't that Ghost of Christmas Future, the one who's like this?
Oh, the ghost of Christmas Past.
Yes, I think it's past, because then middle is that jovial one with his horn.
Yes.
Anyway, She just like shows up to chat to them. And the
She doesn't go, ooh, or
no, it's just suddenly like, whoa, I did really love you. That's that. A good Diana. I did really love
Diana,
you.
Diana, that cockney sparrow.
Yeah, no, I know, but do
Diana Doolittle.
Really, really posh. I did really love you. Is that good?
But
I did really love you. She's showing up to like, you know, say heavy hitting shit as you would as a ghost, non-apparating version. But it did make me wonder if Stephen Daldry and Peter Morgan.
Peter Morgan's the writer, Stephen Daldry's the director,
I think. They get together and strokeify their brains? Are they having like a Michael Patrick King moment? It's a choice. When something like that happens, you go, how did this get through? Like, someone's not sleeping well. Someone's having a personal meltdown. Someone was like, I normally am very diligent with what I say yes to, but I'm fucking tired. Just do what you want. I'm going to put a fucking ghost in. He's not dumb running a tight ship. I'm fucking putting a ghost in. It was so weird. And again, Stephen, Peter, hey, it's me, Sarah. I'm really having a great time with your show. I think you're doing a good job. Ooh, it just tonally was bizarre, but I'm enjoying the ride very much.
I seem to remember that when we first see Dodie in the previous season, you had a little bit of a reaction to him. And that seems to completely vanish. There's no trace of an attraction now.
No. He's very Kendall Roy.
Kendall Roy's chest hair wasn't visible.
It looks like this is a junior high school theater production. And like an 11-year-old who's never done props or costuming is like, may I be in charge of the chest hair? I assume that's the real chest hair of that actor. But it looks like someone has taken rubber cement, just put something on the chest. It is so weird. And I felt the same about Sherry Blair's hair. Basically, the two things that go together and that fucking ghost has no place in this show. The two things that go together as bizarre decisions are Sherry Blair's hair and Dodie's chest hair. I'll assume no one else was wearing a wig and everyone else just looks amazing. Wig masters are a thing, right? So I'm going to assume, I'm sure incorrectly, that everyone else just happens to have their fabulous, natural, and character-appropriate hair. And then they brought in an 11-year-old to do Sherry's hair and Dodie's chest hair. It looked nuts.
So I don't know when it's coming, but you're looking forward to the second half of this final series. I don't really know where they go from Death of Diana.
Well, we know exactly where they go from the Death of Diana.
Prince Andrew and Meghan Markle.
Yeah. But I'm feeling overwhelmed. It's interesting because before yesterday, I was like, if I get any spare time, it's going four blocks. Then this morning, I started Boat Story, and now I feel like that would be the first thing I would do along with watching when the next episode of The Curse comes out, which is that Nathan Fielder show we spoke about last week. Then I probably will binge the rest of The Crown because it's so dirty, but in a hot way.
And I think there might be something else coming as well, something called Fellow Travellers on Paramount Plus. And then probably they'll bring back The Traitors before Christmas. And we've got all our Christmas things that we need to watch as well.
Yeah, we've got to. Do you have any interest in giving the listeners Christmas options?
I don't think a referendum is the way to go.
One finger, one thumb.
Do you have any thoughts on The Crown? Are you disgusted that we even watched it?
No. Is it at that level? Is that how people are thinking about it now?
I don't know how people think
about it. Oy. Okay, are you disgusted at us for watching it?
Is there anything that you think they should have shown that they didn't? Did they ever do an episode about It's a Royal Knockout? I'm not sure. It's also weird, this series, because there was that film, The Queen, with Helen Mirren, written by Peter Morgan, that covers the same period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Did that have a ghost in it?
Maybe that was before he had a stroke.
But we'd love to hear from you. The email address?
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
And coming up,
our very good friend, executive producer, showrunner, writer of The Buccaneers, it's Catherine Jaques.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare.
PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We're friends in real life, and we watched last night. I thought it was so good.
Oh my God.
And I was so fucking relieved for you.
Yeah.
For me, with how genuinely good I thought it was and how genuinely not a slog it was to watch.
Good. Thank you.
That it went like, let's do another. Should we just do another? What's interesting to me about this is if you have a friend.
Yes.
And you don't love what they've done, how do you approach it?
I would totally lie.
Yeah, totally.
I would totally lie. And also, can I also say that when you're even telling me that you like it, I'm just thinking, yeah, but that's what I would say. I spent a long time in the car over here trying to remember the phrase that you said that you would use as a code to listeners if you weren't being honest.
Uh-huh.
And it's, if you say that my show is gloriously funny, I will know.
I would never do that to you.
Okay, good.
Sarah would lie to your face about it.
I think she would.
I wouldn't lie to your face, but nor would I say, Catherine, I've got to tell you, I didn't enjoy your show.
No,
I just pick my words very carefully.
Yeah. And I feel like I'd know. I mean, I think, well, you just always assume the worst, don't you? I do anyway. And there may be people who go through life genuinely feeling like they've made the definitive works of art. And so whatever anyone says to them, it doesn't touch them because they just think, well, you must be wrong because I know it was perfect.
I wonder if anybody who feels like that has ever made anything good.
That's a good question. And let's hope not, for their sake.
But I was genuinely relieved. I found it so watchable. And I don't tend to like period dramas.
Sure.
Also,
that's fine.
I felt a little bit like a dirty old man watching it.
Yeah.
Not that I was perving after the young women who are the leads, but it just felt like, in a way, a man of my age has no business even looking at those women. Do you know what I mean?
I do, but I hope there's kind of something for everyone.
It's not even the show I'm talking about here. I'm talking about younger women in general.
Walking down the street, you
we
feel
were
that.
In Brighton a while ago.
Yeah.
And I was at a pedestrian crossing,
yeah.
And a car pulled up alongside of us, and it's full of young women in their 20s,
yeah.
And straight away they saw me look in the direction of their car, and they all burst out laughing, just that an old man was looking in their direction,
as if granddad.
Yes, and then one of them did an ironic wave at me.
Oh no!
And they also, and I wasn't even looking at them in that way. I was just looking left, right and left again.
Just being in their vicinity.
Yes.
Well, I spent most of last year with these young actors. But like spending time with any young people, you realise quite quickly that they don't really take much notice of you. You might feel like, oh, they're all going for a drink and it's going to be awkward in a minute because they'll probably ask me and I probably shouldn't go. But of course they don't ask you. And
right,
of course they've got no interest in you.
You don't occur to them.
You're not even in their peripheral vision.
We're not going to invite you out.
Yeah, good.
I want to make this point because I do feel that this was the target demo.
Yeah.
I kept thinking there's no way I'm going to like it, but I'm going to just remember that it's not for me and
sure.
I'm going to bring an objectivity to it.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel that way at
really
all. I really felt like this is just fun. It's well paced. It's spectacular to look at.
Yeah,
and it was a really wonderful world for adults to be in.
It's lovely to hear that because it was never particularly the intention to make it for teenagers, but I hope that there's quite a lot in it for certainly older women and potentially their partners.
Their dirty old man partners.
Their dirty old pervs in their house. But we were quite keen early on to make the mother characters not two-dimensional. And I think there's a danger in period drama in particular that the mother character is going to be the sort of twittery one who says, all I want is for my daughter to get married. And actually, partly because we ended up being so thrilled to get Christina Hendricks to play the main mother, but because also it just felt natural that we would want to do this over the course of the series, the mother characters do get storylines and do get depth and are hopefully surprising and three-dimensional and don't just feel like the kind of window dressing in the shop with the pretty young girls.
Can you talk about how she wound up getting cast in that role?
She was genuinely the first person that we approached with it. Very quickly in the casting process, Apple were like, who are you thinking of for Mrs. St. George? And we gave them the list of the people they were thinking of. They were like, well, let's try Christina Hendricks. And she got sent the scripts and I did a Zoom call with her. Camera off from her side.
Camera off from the original Zoom call.
Yeah.
Was it like The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, exactly. There was just a face of it. No, it was just a blank screen. So actually, it was a very easy sort of process getting her. We were delighted. It was very nerve-wracking the first day we met her. We were going to take her out to dinner. She came downstairs and we were waiting outside and somebody had booked a taxi in Edinburgh to take us to this restaurant and the taxi didn't turn up.
Oh.
And it was all that. It was fine. We're all being nice. How was your flight? She was jet-lagged. She could not have been more charming, but the taxi didn't come. And I honestly think it was like, I mean, I'm going to say it was at least 3/4 of an hour standing on this street corner in a quite shitty bit of Edinburgh. And she was so nice about it, but it was the most stressful thing.
Any situation where you're kind of feeling like, oh, it isn't usually like this.
Yes, of course. Oh, it's so weird because we can normally get a taxi straight away and all that's really. And then this proper pissed drunk boat came up and started shouting at us. And I thought any minute now I was going to realise it's Christina Hendricks. And she was really nice to him. And it was so
And were
tense.
You feeling responsible for the drunk man?
Yeah,
it's your fault in some way.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that we've allowed this drunk man in your presence. And she said, oh my God, I live in LA, it's fine. She was so nice about it.
You don't feel like one day you're going to open up her autobiography?
Yeah, she's going to go that fucking bit on that first night and that drunk man that she invited into my presence. Yeah.
She's the most, certainly to people our age, I think the most recognisable face in the show.
Yeah.
But also, one of the male leads, I knew him from Mamma Mia too.
Oh, Josh Dillon.
Yes.
He's so nice.
So were you just waiting for the moment where you could bring it up?
Oh, I think I brought it up almost immediately. After we'd cast him, I think not in the casting, I don't think it came up.
I said to Sarah when we were watching the show, this has the feel of a good musical. But only
they
don't break into song. It feels the energy of the show and the friendship between the young women. It feels like a song could happen at any given moment.
I wish there would be a song that would happen. I mean, there's a lot of music in the show, but none of them sing it.
I thought the way the music worked was so sophisticated and good and just sexy and not too try
hard. It really works. And it was a process of working out how the music was going to go. In the post-production where we started trying, or we had a really brilliant music supervisor who advised us, obviously, but he had this real vision from the start that it was going to be all female musicians, all Americans, and this amazing woman called Stella, who is in a band called Warpaint in the States, who I hadn't heard of, I confess, but are a big deal and are brilliant.
And does that make a big difference, having that music in your show? Does it open it up to new audiences?
It's been massive with the trailer. When the trailer came out, we hadn't known they were going to use the Olivia Rodrigo track on it, and it had only just been released, so it was very new. And we saw it and it was like, God, they're really pushing it for girls of that certain age. And the TikTok scores, which, you know, I don't think you even call them scores. I didn't know anything about TikTok before. The scores on TikTok, it's like it's strictly.
Views, I imagine.
It's views?
It's views.
Oh,
how many people view
great.
It and also then like it? It was off the scale because it had this Olivia Rodrigo song on it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When you were casting this, everyone in this show is like so beautiful.
Yeah.
Someone comes in, let's say they audition,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of the great auditions that you've seen.
Yeah.
But it is a face that only a mother could love. What happens?
Honestly, we kind of set out thinking we probably wouldn't have unbelievably beautiful people in it. We were kind of like, it'd be nice if we have some people who end up being sort of a bit more normal
like
looking.
Like pretty, yeah. But normal.
Sure. I mean, actors are generally of that age.
Yes. And also a lot of the actors, all of whom I thought were good.
Yeah.
But most, if not all of them, are also models.
They are models.
I mean, it's at a very different level of attractiveness.
Yeah. I don't know. And we met a lot of them on Zoom. So it was hard to tell quite how gorgeous they were until they turned up in our orbit. And in Scotland last year, we were living in this apartment block, all of us together, for the whole of last year, basically. So we'd found this kind of group of people. It was properly like a Big Brother situation because they were all away from home.
Oh, my God.
So there was sort of I think there were 12 of them, six boys, six girls, all gorgeous, pretty, not all single, actually. A few of them not single at the start and then single quite quickly afterwards. All of them up there, like it was kind of first week of university for them all. And Matthew Broome, who plays Guy Thwart, he hadn't even left drama school when we first auditioned him. He'd never lived on his own before. And I saw him one day and he was like buying plants and he'd put some pictures up on his walls and things. And it was just like, in my 20s, I couldn't have... You know,
come on, did it take you back to your younger days working in a company providing traffic and travel news to various BBC and commercial radio stations? There are all these young people energized by a tailback on the M6.
By the money they'd been given, by the glamour of their role. It was so far removed, I can't tell you, from anything that I experienced in my 20s or indeed 30s or most of my 40s. And actually, I had a conversation with Guy Remmers, who I think had left drama school maybe like 8 or 9 months or something before he first had this audition and started to get this job. And he was really like, I've waited a long time for this. I felt like it was too late for me. And you want to go, what, you've been out of drama school 6 months?
Yeah.
You know, and I remember that feeling when you come out of drama school and you don't work, except for me, it lasted 25 years. But I felt, you know, I was so fond of them all. In a pathetic sort of maternal,
you didn't have any kind of crushy vibes. Your Nick's not at home worrying that one of them is going to turn your head.
Oh,
they'll have
God.
A sort of Mrs. Robinson complex.
Can you imagine if there was even anything? No, I honestly no.
Which of the relationships depicted on the show has the most of you and Nick in it?
Oh God, Mrs. St. George and the Colonel. No, that's a terrible thing to say because that puts Nick in a bad light. I think it's... Well, this is actually quite a nice thing to say for my husband, but I think the Guy Thwart character, who is the sort of charming, quite charismatic one, I quite enjoy writing flirting because I feel like Nick is actually quite good at flirting.
Really?
And, yeah. He's good at that, actually. I do think he is quite good at that. And I feel like I've written sort of flirty scenes over the years, not just necessarily in Buccaneers, but I've written whole sort of flirty scenes which have been based on conversations that we've had.
Wow.
That's
nice, isn't it?
So sweet.
Have you ever mind any terrible moments of your own marriage?
Ever
been like in a horrible argument and thought, oh, I'm putting this in the back pocket?
Always. Sometimes I've said it, actually, and sometimes I've actually had to pretend to go to the loo to write something down on my phone where there's a line. Yeah. I feel like with all the big things or small things happening in your life, you spend the whole time going, oh God, that would be good for a scene or a...
Yes, that Nora Ephron thing, isn't it? Everything is copy.
Yeah.
But it's about hiding the fact that you're doing it in the moment.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Funnily enough, somebody said to me this morning, there's a scene in the first episode of The Buccaneers where Guy Thwart talks about his mum dying. And somebody said to me, oh, I really could tell that you'd written that after your mum died. And actually, I'd written that episode before my mum died. So all of that stuff about grief and about ill mums and dead mums.
Oh, that's so funny. Because I was listening to it and there's that line about, you know, the world without her in it.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was straight out of a conversation like you or I might have had when we lost our mothers.
I think actually that line, truthfully, was something that Nick said when his dad died, where he said it's not only just that he missed his dad, but that he missed his mum even when he was in a room with her. Which I totally understand, having lost my mum, because you don't just lose one of them. You feel like you've lost that duo. So actually that, I should credit him with that line as well, actually.
Jeff was talking about like a usual dislike of period drama. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Which I never go, ooh, a period drama.
No.
I have to say, I think most people who go, ooh, period drama are a little weird.
Yeah.
What this show has helped me realize, though, is that what I don't like once I'm in most of the time, and I thought this even watching The Crown, as I was like,
yeah,
that castle looks like it fucking stinks. Like, they need, like, they got all these people. Someone needs to clean better.
Yeah.
And what I really liked about this show was how, like, it looked like the whole fucking place smelled good. Good.
It does look lovely, doesn't it?
You know, to sort of support the beauty of all the people in it. How do you think you would fare as a debutante?
On that staircase in the white, I think I'd look very flushed against the white.
That's beautiful.
I think, no, not in an attractive way, in a sweaty sort of, I can
like
feel
in a
myself
heat rash
like
kind of way.
A heat rash, yeah.
Would you jostle to get to the front?
I might have done when I was 19. I would certainly be very near the back now, needing a wee and worrying that my feathers had fallen a bit. The sort of idea behind that scene was supposed to be that moment when you walk into a party at any age and sort of go, God, I feel awful. I thought I was looking forward to this, but actually it's horrible. Because I think the sort of easy version of that scene would be, we're very excited about being on this staircase. But actually the truth of that... When these girls were told that it was the most important moment of their life and they were literally standing there being sort of marked by men and older people, is grim, isn't it?
First episode, pink poodle.
Pink poodle.
And a peacock.
Yeah.
Real or VFX, visual effects?
Pink poodle, very real. She was called Mary Jane. She had to be taken off set because she was being badly behaved.
Oh, shit.
She had a special person whose job it was to fan her on set, and she had her own trailer.
What a diva.
The peacock was stuffed, so it wasn't supposed to be real. I think, weirdly, when I watched it, I think I thought it looked like a real
peacock. I thought it was real. Peacocks are one of those things that make me think, like, maybe God exists. Like, I'm like, maybe there is a God.
Yeah.
Like, the saturation of the colours on that thing are
unbelievable.
So
it didn't look like
the one in the bathroom, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a fake, completely fake, not even supposed to be real.
And on that expense, are you across that? So if you write a pink poodle, does somebody come over to you at some station, that is going to cost $3,000? Are you sure you want to spend
the money on that?
They
started to do that a bit as time went on. And in episode 7, there's a kind of circus theme to the party. And there was a brilliant woman whose name I now can't remember, who was a well-known woman about London at the time, who used to drive around in a carriage pulled by zebras.
Oh,
and I was so keen on the idea of having that, but that was nixed. And then they did have a kind of stuffed zebra on set. And I think you do glimpse it, but you don't get the full effect, which is what we sort of talked about. There was so much stuff like that, though. It's so crazy. Things like when there's a letter that somebody reads and you don't see any of it on camera. And first of all, somebody's job is to write what that letter is actually going to be. Then somebody has to practice the handwriting for that letter. Then you get shown 8 different versions of what this letter might be. And you're like, you're literally not going to see this on screen. I mean, that's just a tiny example of something that happens about every 4 minutes. And the rooms full of sort of moustaches for the supporting artists, or the rooms full of costumes for people that are going to be in the background and you're never going to see, or the wigs for the, you know, it was huge.
How many weeks does it take before you stop putting wigs and hats on?
I mean, had I been left alone, I was constantly battling not just seeming like a competition winner. That's the truth. Nick had bought me, when we first found out that it had been commissioned, Nick had got me this T-shirt, which was, you know, those ones where they have like John, Paul, George and Ringo, the names or whatever. And there's various different versions of them. And he'd got one for me that was Nan, Ginny, Conchita, Lizzie and Mabel. And then on the first day of filming, on my first day on set, I sort of thought, oh, I could wear that T-shirt. Otherwise, when am I ever going to wear it? And I wore it underneath a jumpsuit with it done up. Because I thought then, you know, nobody need know that I've ever worn it.
It's a little secret thing.
Yeah, it's a little secret thing for me. Yeah. And we turned up on set and there was this unbelievable house with these gardens and there were people there with horses and there were trailers and there was hundreds of people. And I just absolutely walked in there and I was like, look at my T-shirt, to all of the girls. And they're all, and literally there's photos of me like that, like I've literally won a competition.
Oh.
I look like such a twat.
Before we let you go.
Yeah.
What have you been watching at the moment?
Have you watched Hacks?
Yes.
Do you like it?
Very much.
Oh, good.
I think you didn't like it particularly.
No, I've got a very mixed relationship with it. I think
some
of it is brilliant and then some of it is really heavy-handed. So anything with Deborah Vance, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, she's great.
The thing that can take me out of it sometimes is the subplot with her assistant. That feels like very syrupy.
I don't mind that, though. I feel like that's okay.
I just enjoyed
being in that world. Here's something else that I'd be interested to know what you think of it. And I've been watching this with the kids, Superstore.
Oh,
do you know that?
America Ferrera is in it. People say it's good. The visual of it pushes me away instead of draws me in.
Okay.
But we're always looking for things that feel like a good watch for you with your child between the age of 10 and 16.
I think it's a good family watch.
What are the chances?
Yeah.
Series 2, Buccaneers.
Yeah.
I see a lot of oil paintings in the background on this show. What are the chances me and Sarah rendered in oil in the background?
Being you, I'd love that.
Make that happen?
I'll try. I'll do my best. I've done a couple of little things like that. In one of the episodes, there are two characters who do speak, but you never know their names except for in the credits, who are called Lady Haste and Lady Trailing, who are named after our friends Greg Haste and Susie Trailing.
Sarah's glaring at you now.
She's really
at the
cross.
Mention of other friends.
I'm sorry.
I was really
ready. Is that
ready.
Thing when you realise how high up in your...
We always say... You guys are so much higher up for us than we are for you. And that's okay. That's okay.
No, but I couldn't get away with calling them Lady Lloyd and Lady Baron. That would have been... I mean, I could actually. Lady Lloyd and Lady Baron sounds quite good.
I know.
Baron Lloyd, you could get a look, you know.
I know, but anyway, it's not a big deal.
I'll try that for next season, I promise you. I'll try and get something in.
Here's how much I love her. We have an only child. Catherine, I'm sure wouldn't mind me saying, is an only child. And as a parent of an only child, I don't think everyone does, but plenty of us do feel like, oh, I didn't give him a sibling. Oh, yeah, da, 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 da. And then what you look for is just like only children with incredibly full lives. I don't think I know anyone who has a fuller life than Catherine does. Everyone loves her. She's anytime that I feel sad that there wasn't like a day that I genuinely, when I feel sad that there wasn't a day that I brought a newborn home to my son to be like, meet your little brother. I'm like, Kevin Jakewitz has a great fucking life. So I hope that he goes on to like have people who love him and a decent job.
Why don't you sing Get Into the Inbox to the tune of Get Into the Groove?
Get into the inbox, oh, you got to prove your love to me. Hey. This first email comes from longtime listener, Chloe. She listened when we did Succession and she was AI jerk machine. Dear FC and NC, I have recently reattempted Seinfeld, reminding myself that people I respect and people I know who work in comedy say it's amazing once you get into it. I was very curious to hear you saying you had attempted a few times but were now finding it to be brilliant. I'm 6 episodes into season 3. Is this far enough that I should be into it by now? And I'll just quickly pause here and say, yes, that's far enough. I think it is. That's a sweet spot. Great. The characters and the situations I am finding more appealing and more creative, but I wouldn't say I laugh aloud ever. And I feel like we need to talk about the stand-up bits. I don't find them even vaguely funny, and I know this has mystified other friends of mine. I'm curious to know, especially as a stand-up comedic master with an intricate knowledge of your craft, Sarah, is this good stand-up?
Has she seen your act?
Do you find it funny? Now, I had to include this email because this will basically be my favorite thing to talk about, but you're going to have to corral me if I go too big.
Okay.
Okay, so first of all, I am not a master, and I don't think I have an intricate knowledge of my craft. Okay, here's what I think. I think, Chloe, I think you really don't like it, and I think you feel ashamed to discuss that, and you're making me feel comfortable to share my shame. I've never been able to understand why people love Richard Pryor. There. I don't get it. People talk about it. I go, you know what I'm going to sit down with? Richard Pryor. And I'll be like, I'm finding that. People talk about the killed my car bit. People are like, all right. And I'll be like, I can't watch this. I don't get it.
I think the first question we need to ask Chloe is, what do you find funny? Because comedy is as subjective as anything can be.
Yes.
There's plenty of stuff that people love that I've got no time for. I've never seen a full episode of Friends, even though I know it's some of the best joke writing and comic performances out there. I don't really like stuff like The Good Place, where there's the sentiment. So I'd be interested to know if Chloe already liked Curb Your Enthusiasm, for example, but couldn't get into Seinfeld. That would be interesting to me.
Okay.
And I would sort of understand it in a way because it's of its time. And I don't even necessarily mean the subject matter. I mean, it looks like what it is, which is a 90s sitcom with cheesy slap bass musical stings and big performances for a studio audience. So if that visual language of TV feels dated to you, it's going to be a hard nut to crack.
Yeah, Chloe, I would love to know, like, how are you with Curb?
I think his stand-up is a bit like watching an early episode of The Simpsons. It can feel really sparse, and the areas that they're mining for jokes can feel obvious or hacky, but that's because it was so influential that so much came after it that was built on it. And I think that is true of Seinfeld as a comedian, especially those bits that you see at the beginning of the sitcom. But you've got to try and understand how unlike anything else it was
when
it was first on TV. And then the trouble is that everything that came along in its wake aped it.
Yes.
But I'd say there's nobody you would rather listen to talk about the craft of stand-up.
This is the thing, but then I'm sort of obsessed. I obsessively read stuff he puts out, or if he ever does a podcast, I always listen to it. I listened to something he did with Amy Schumer. She was talking about hanging out with him. She's like, oh yeah, and do you remember that day where like we sat there and you just like took my 20-minute set and destroyed it and explained to me that I actually have 6 workable minutes? And I was like, oh my God, I want him to destroy my 20-minute set. I was like, I bet I only have four minutes. And so there's something, like, everyone else talks about he's the ultimate, like, chiropractor. Like, you're like, why is this broken? So if anyone out there is listening, because we got listeners in high places, and I trust people to not rob my idea, but my dream podcast is Jerry Seinfeld has jobbing comics. So it can't be anyone you've heard of. I think that's important. It's people who are like working the road and doing their 20s and doing the clubs, and they bring their 20 or they bring their 45 and they go, Dr. Seinfeld, why does this is not working? And then you get to hear him. Oh, I got chills. But I also think like anyone who's sort of interested in comedy would love to listen to that. Thank you.
This comes from Claire, who says, "Dear FC and NC, great shout out for Marion and Jeff. As a late teen, I stayed up to watch it like a genius one-man show. How on earth I related to a divorced middle-aged man is testimonial to how good it was. Come on, stream it now. I'd love to go back and watch it again now that I actually know divorced, bitter, middle-aged men." But it was the way that he tried and like suppress or repress his bitterness and put a spin of positivity on everything.
That's brilliant.
So really, so good. Claire continues, "Under your eye, I finally watched season one, Couples Therapy. Fuck me, that man Mao, of poor Annie and Mao. He was the most despicable and horrific human I have ever had the misery of watching. That is actually real, has genuinely impacted me. I am only finally able to sleep again after heavy Googling and knowing Annie did finally divorce him. Are there worse people on season two? Bye."
Claire, to answer your question, in season three, there is a guy whose name has already escaped me, but he is the villain. He is the Mao of season three. But what's interesting about him is that Orna has a breakthrough with him, and he kind of, in my opinion, becomes a quite sympathetic character. And this other lady, the Mormon lady, is the fucking one that I could not stomach from start to finish. So keep on keeping on, baby. It's just the greatest of the greatest. This next email comes from Suppyway. We heard from Suppyway a couple weeks ago, and this is her rebuttal to our rebuttal. I think I stole that from Drag Race. "Hey, FCNNC, I just got done watching House of Hammer, a three-part docuseries on Max about Armie Hammer's alleged abuse and violent proclivities and how they stem from generational trauma of his dynastic forefathers. Do you know anything about Armie Hammer?"
I don't.
"I know very little about him other than that he was the guy, he was in The Social Network playing twins, and he's sort of like handsome. And I love generational trauma."
Less keen on violent proclivities, though.
No, but so many of these fuckers are doing that shit, I think. So I'm going to remember this one, Sip Away, because House of it just, it sounds like one that I could get into. She continues, "I'm now really loving the show." She fucking did this in her last email. "You're really making us work for you, okay? It's very rewarding, very tiring." But I respect it, and it's 100% what
I would
do.
Yeah, you like feeling like you've earned it.
Oh, I fucking love it, yeah. Okay, P.S. In answer to a question Jeff asked a few episodes ago, we were just talking about this, "I was raised Christian and still am, but I have to confess that as a theater nerd, I learned most of the story of Easter from Jesus Christ Superstar." There you go, Jeff. XO Suppyway.
Fill Sarah's heart with joy. Fill our inbox with email.
Fuck off at firecrotchandnormcore.com.
This week, Catherine Jaques liked to watch Hacks on Prime Video and Superstore on Netflix. Sarah watched Boat Story on BBC iPlayer. I watched Riders of Justice, which is available to buy lots of places, including Apple TV and Amazon Prime Video. I think it's also on Now TV. And we watched The Crown on Netflix.
Well, we know what time of year it is. Americans, Thanksgiving is coming, and the goose is getting fat. Don't you dare put a penny in the old man's hat. I'm debating whether or not to host Thanksgiving this year.
For all our listeners.
No, I'm not going to have you people to my house. What if you try to touch me? Okay, everyone, come on, come to my, don't touch me, but come to my table. Come, gather. I've made a wild mushroom roasty. I've made some potatoes. I've made a mac and cheese with sweet potato. Ooh. And feta and cheddar, which you don't think combine, but they do. I'm going to buy my pies from the store. And maybe I'll make Manhattans.
For the people who can handle their liquor, motherfucker.
Diet Coke for the baby. Thanks for listening. See you soon. Bye.